This is GamesAtWork.biz, your weekly podcast about gaming, technology, and play. Your hosts are Michael Martin, Andy Piper, and Michael Rowe. The thoughts and opinions on this podcast are those of the hosts and guests alone and are not the opinions of any organization which they have been, are, or may be affiliated with. This is episode 327, Virtually Athletic. Good morning, good evening, good afternoon. Michael Rowe here on a beautiful, no longer rainy, kind of cloudy, not too hot, not too cold day in North Carolina with my friend and co-host Michael Martin for another exciting GamesAtWork.biz. Michael, how are you?
I'm feeling muggy.
You been mugged?
No, just it's not too hot, but it certainly is muggy. All the moisture in the air, you know, is what it is. And luckily for me, and luckily for our friend Ian, we both know how to avoid getting mugged.
Yes.
So do we have a show? Do we have a show for you this week? And we're delighted to bring you tons of links and stories about virtual reality and AI and robots and all kinds of good stuff. Just sit back or lean forward. Do what you do.
Do what you do. Because all of it is driven by you, our listeners, by tweeting us at gamesatwork_biz or joining us over at our website at gamesatwork.biz.
So Ian wrote a post that certainly caught my eye. And this is all about doing martial arts in the metaverse. So his post and his notion around this was, wouldn't it be interesting? And the fact is that it is interesting,
yes.
To be able to do martial arts sparring, you know, from the World Taekwondo folks, to do it completely virtually. So this inspired me, by the way, Michael, to watch Scott Pilgrim versus the World.
Which, you've not seen that before?
No, I've seen it before. I just happened to come across it again. Yes. And it has, you know, elements of this sort of thing. I love the universal opening, you know, 8-bit player, you know, kind of music. Anyway, the video that Ian shared is about two martial artists that are fighting one another, actually in the same room, but virtually. And they've just added a couple of mocap items on them. And they're now interacting with one another through the Kinect style environment. And he wrote about it and said, hey, Michael, you might get a kick out of this. Ha ha. And it's like, well, yes, I in fact did. And I have been noodling on this kind of an idea for a while, because much of my martial arts training during the pandemic has been exactly this way. It's been through Zoom. And it's hard sometimes when you are trying to model what the other person is doing, right? And you don't have that depth perception that you do in real life. You've got a screen. And if someone is wearing all black, as ninjas are wont to do, it sometimes becomes a little bit difficult to see what's the angle of someone's arm or what's the foot placement. So this is an interesting notion where you could envision a future not too far away from now where same kind of mocap things, you might put them on yourself. You'd have a camera looking at you that's comparing against a live or recorded person that is now teaching you how to position your body and do the moves. So just like for a tennis swing or a golf swing or a variety of other things, you could imagine that now you're matching the speed and the precision and the placement of how you move your body to learn some new tactics. And I loved it. I thought it was great.
Well, what I was really excited about this was the reference to trying to get virtual events in the Olympics in 2028.
Oh, yes.
In Los Angeles.
Yes. Right?
So it's not just a cool technology demo, but there's actually a long-term objective of saying, you know, esports are sports. In this case, I mean, they're doing almost the exact same level of expended energy as you would in a real competition, except for the fact that you're not getting hit by the other person, right? So there's a safety aspect, actually, from that perspective. And it just seemed like a really cool way of allowing you to get that physical benefit, that exercise benefit, mm-hmm. that fitness benefit, et cetera. And it got me thinking of, you know, the next version of Apple Fitness Plus, right?
Exactly right.
Because, you know, I've been doing Fitness Plus on those days where it's just too dang hot to go outside mm-hmm. and do my exercises, right? And I've been enjoying it. They're not quite as obnoxious as what you see in the
television advertisements,
SNL commercials that they're making fun of, like Peloton and others, like, hey, you, yeah, you know, the overly happy instructors. But they are, I mean, they're trying to give you
an experience,
a feedback loop and an experience and some energy to do what is basically a boring exercise. So, you know, I'm doing like treadmill, right? Mm-hmm. You can do bike, you can do other things. There's yoga. I've tried some of that. I've tried some of the dance, etc. The one thing that I wish, and sorry to rat hole for just 30 seconds, right, is they have these great music soundtracks on the treadmill ones, but they put the music down too low. So you can hear the person gabbing too high. It's like, shut up. Just play the music. Put up a sign that says, okay, now increase your incline by 2%, right? Just do that. Shut up. Let me listen to the music. I enjoy the music. Yes, you look all happy, but I don't care. It's not about you. It's about me doing my exercise.
Well, you know, maybe that's a feature enhancement there that you could turn up. You could crank it up to 11. And yeah. Turn the instructor
they
could put down.
They're talking yep. down at the bottom of the screen, at like a voice, you know, text to speech.
Yeah, closed captioning.
Show me the text at the bottom, yeah. Or speech to text, mm-hmm. and then shut up. Let me listen to the songs, because I'm enjoying the music soundtrack. Anyway, but Ian, thank you. This is a really cool article and a great demonstration of what could possibly be the start of the next World Taekwondo Finals.
Yeah, well, seeing this kind of virtual games in the Olympics, you're right, Michael, that would be really incredible. And seeing esports, you know, getting into the Olympics, that'd be fun, too. I heard something this week about sports that are no longer in the Olympics, and one of them was tug of war. So apparently, yeah. At one point in time, tug of war was an Olympic event.
Well, it's a feat of strength, right?
Feats of
strength. And an arm of strength.
Yes. Why not, right?
Yeah. But I seem to remember, was it in Chariots of Fire, right? Because that was really about the Olympics, mm-hmm. early days of the modern Olympics. And I don't know if it was that movie or another movie that showed some of the other sports. And I do remember tug of war being in there.
Yeah. Yeah, Chariots of Fire was just, you know, with that soundtrack and the slow motion Vangelis. Running. And that just annoyed me. I don't know.
Oh, but I love that music. Not necessarily that one song, but that whole style of music. Vangelis did some great electronic music.
So if you were attempting, speaking of style, to be a painter.
Yes.
Lexus tweeted at us. See? Hint for our listening audience, tweet at us and we'll find it and we'll talk about it. A really intriguing way of doing painting. And the funny thing was, is that he did this tweet before he probably heard us talking about MS Paint, which we did on last week's episode. This particular one is doing some very rudimentary drawings and then letting the artificial intelligence behind the scenes interpret what the drawing is supposed to be of, and then replacing it with real life. So think about the Grand Theft Auto experience we were talking about before, and yes. Then say, hey, I'm going to paint a lake or some trees or ground. And this is fantabulous, isn't it?
It's like the computer becomes your designer, and you're giving broad brush strokes of what the design should look like. You go, you know, I'm thinking maybe we put a lake over here, and then we have some pine trees on this side, and we have a mountain behind it. Make sure it's snow-capped, etc.
Right.
And you basically do broad brush strokes, and it will use, you know, using GAN and other techniques, dynamically generate the visual artifacts necessary to meet your design requirements.
Yeah, no, that's
so cool.
It's really, really cool. And it wasn't long after Lexus showed this tweet that I find a related one, and maybe this is the search engine of Twitter that does this, from Kevin Franz about an application called ClipDraw that allows you to do something relatively similar, which says, I'm going to identify a few things. I'm going to do a very basic, rudimentary, as we like to say in our dojo, big crayon view of the world. And it then uses the artificial intelligence to fill it in. So I'm drawing a little bit of a sub. So the notion of a sub being a tubular bell-shapey sort of
tubular
thing.
Tubular.
And it
versus
does it.
Tubular bells, which is another piece of awesome music.
Yes. Well, the little Vangelis, you know, kind of thread going on through here, right? So neat thing here about seeing AI enhancing the human artistic ability to go forward, right?
Yes. I think it's really cool. And when I think of trying to design things, my artistic abilities are so bad. I mean, if I draw a stick figure, I'm like really excited, right? Because, all right, yes, I was able to draw a stick figure. And you can say, okay, I want a stick figure. I'm going to draw a stick figure, but I want that to be a fully rendered alien with scales and green gills and red teeth, right? And it'll go, sure, we got you.
So remember once upon a time, it wasn't that long ago, or maybe it was, we were playing sort of this online game, iOS Pictionary sort of game, where you had
draw something.
Draw something. That was it. Yes, thank you. So... Hey, draw something, people. If you're still around, look at these videos,
go draw
incorporate
something.
That, and then use it for draw something. Wouldn't that be fun, right?
That would be cool.
All right, so...
It would just make draw something take off again.
It would. And
like a plane.
Or a car.
Or both.
Or a bird. So Andy, who is unfortunately not with us this week for the recording, had shared a couple of intriguing links. This one from the Beeb, talking about a prototype flying car that, you know what? It looks like a car. It has wings, and they fold on in, and it's got one of those Roadrunner-esque, you know, tailwing sort of setups back there from the 1960s. And this looks pretty slick, and it's actually had its first maiden voyage, I guess you call that, if they're flying.
Yeah. Well, what's really cool about this, I had just watched a show, I can't remember if it was on National Geographic or on public television, on the drive to... electrical planes, right? All electric planes. And one of the key desires there is to get to all electric commuter planes that are small enough to basically become air taxis,
right?
I.e. cars, in order to allow for increased mobility in urban areas with reduced pollution and reduced noise. And it's interesting. This vehicle, I haven't been able to, you know, go through all of it in detail to know what type of flight mechanism it's using.
Right.
It does say it runs on regular petrol, so it's fossil fuel. But 600 mile range, that is phenomenal. That gets beyond basic commuter, right? That gets into more regional airlines space. So, you know, if I could take off and do a 600-mile flight
right.
from my own car...
At 170 kilometers per hour. So you're doing better than Audubon speeds for that sort of thing, for sure.
I could get, you know, up to New York. I could get down, you know, Florida, right? You can pretty much go up and down the east coast of the U.S. if you're central to the U.S. with one tank. That's really cool.
That would be incredible. Now, the question in my mind would be, regional taxis or small sort of things like that would do well for not fixed wing aircraft. Would be much better for helicopter, you know, sort of quadricopter sort of modes.
It's
right?
Quadricopter, octocopters, and things of that nature.
Yeah, but this for the longer distance, longer hauls, like you said, could be really positive, right?
Well, one of the great things I saw, and I'll try to see if I can find the video or at least a link to the story. I mean, they're looking at cargo planes, electric cargo planes that are not quadricopters, but fixed wing, all electric cargo planes that can carry large cargo. And when we can get to that, that will completely change the dynamics of the the industry, because that means you had huge improvements in battery capacity
and clean energy.
Battery capacity, solar panel conversion to energy, weight, right? Those are the three things that are driving the how fast can this adopt. If you don't do solar, then you got just battery and capacity and weight, right? You still have to resolve those two issues to get to the cost performance ratio necessary in commercial airlines today. But there's a huge set of companies, and they focus on like five or six of them during this show that I watched, really trying to drive those very specific design points down. And if you think about that, we've seen a similar thing happen over the last 15 to 20 years in the space race, because what's happening in a week and a half, right? We've got Branson going up in Virgin Galactic. You've got Jeff Bezos, his brother, and one of the original Mercury 13 women flying up in space on Blue Origin. You've got Musk doing what he's doing with SpaceX. And all of that is driving costs down, driving efficiency up to making it more consumable and a better market. Can't wait to see that happen with airlines, battery, and solar.
Well, right. And getting into low Earth orbit now makes those longer hauls even more practical when you think about it that, right?
Think 45 minutes to Tokyo.
Yeah.
Right?
We could go for lunch.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to it. You're on.
Yeah, I would definitely do that. You know, we could actually get there when the fish market opens in Tokyo and maybe not even feel jet lagged. So, speaking of jets, there's a story here probably for you, and maybe a few others, because I don't have a PC at the moment, as our listeners know, about Microsoft Flight Simulator. So lots more innovation happening in this space, and it's only been out for a little bit of time, right?
Well, it's been out almost a year now. So this article, and I'm going to hit to your other point in a second, but jump off from this article. This is the development team over at, and I'm trying to remember how to pronounce their name, Asobo, which is the company that actually wrote Microsoft's latest flight simulator for Microsoft. And they're showing off a huge performance improvement that they've done with Flight Sim. And there's a video attached. I highly recommend you watching it, but it's, 20 to 30% performance increase, which means less requirements on the hardware to run it, with a lot less frame dropout, et cetera. And the reason I think this is so important is Microsoft's announcement recently of Xbox Gaming Cloud being available, which now says you can run your Microsoft and other company games through a browser on your iPad, on your Mac, right? All those other platforms that Microsoft doesn't support. No, not on your watch. Not yet. But now you're getting to the point where the hardware is not the limiting factor. The network is becoming less and less of a factor. One of the things I saw, I was listening to a couple of people talking about actually testing out the latest Xbox Cloud service, right? And if you're using a hardwired device and or a hardwire controller, that reduces the latencies, because if you're using a Bluetooth wireless controller and your laptop is running wirelessly to the network, you now have two hops points where there are latency issues. But I mean, this performance boost means less demanding requirement for a data center that's going to be driving people to use Microsoft Flight Simulator via the cloud. This is really, really cool, and I'm very impressed. So I'm looking forward to testing this out once it comes out.
I am too, and that really relates directly into the New York Times article, Michael, that you kind of seamlessly blended the two together. This notion of the cloud is becoming really the intriguing factor that says you don't need to buy the expensive hardware. Now, you still need controllers. Yep. You still need a screen. And you still need games. And ideally, those games should have a value to them so that we're not back in the old free-to-play kind of mode, you know, pay to advance.
Well, yeah. Well, this is the thing that I purposely blended those two together because I remember back in my startup days in the day job, right, working with many different companies to try to figure out how could you stream game quality capabilities over that. And we actually developed with one of the virtual worlds a proof of concept where I had my Palm Trio, and you can see this on my YouTube channel, my Palm Trio controlling a virtual world.
Right.
Now, what it was really doing was connecting to a virtual machine running that virtual world client and sending the messages back and forth, so all the latency problems, but that's really kind of the root of where this was. And now we see, 15 years later, just the power and possibilities of what's going on, right? This is phenomenal, actually 13 years later, this is phenomenal capabilities that are coming out there. And to your point is, what's the value, right? And what are people willing to pay for? That's going to be the other key thing. So you can't just put a bunch of free games up on a free cloud service for free access and expect to get it for free, right? You're going to be paying for something. Either it's going to be free to play, pay to advance. It's going to be pay with your data, right?
Yep.
All the things that we talk about and have been talking about for some time.
Years.
But again, very cool. I'm very excited to see this advance just because more and more games will get in the hands of more and more people. I'm excited.
Absolutely. So related to all this, and play yes. is an important part of this whole podcast, has been for a long time. So even recent listeners are not going to be surprised to know that, hey, we've got some Lego stories here. And do we have a couple of interesting Lego stories this time around? Not just builds, which we have some interesting ones, of course. This one is an app. And this particular app is outrageously amazing because what it does is it uses their phone to scan what your pile of bricks are right in front of you, and then suggest to you what could you make from them, and then to help you find the pieces in your pile right away so you can start to put them together. Now, some might say that takes away from the fun. Some. Others might holy moly, isn't this cool?
Or something that we won't say on our podcast because we like our clean tag,
yes.
But you'll see it used in the tweet talking about this technology.
Yeah. So this is really quite amazing when you think about it. And Lego's no slouch when it comes to integrating technology in with the plastic bricks. There's been plenty of examples of that over time. This is really quite clever. And you can imagine where, you know, another option might be for Lego to say, you know, you could make this cute little dog or this nice little spaceship or this fish, or with a small purchase that you could go and say, buy now, you will send you the rest of the kit that you need to make an aquarium or this better fish or this other thing, right?
Yep.
Wow, cool stuff.
Blows my mind. And what's really cool about it is it really shows the power of machine learning because, right, really that's all it is. Mm-hmm. It's, can I do visual recognition of the pieces in the giant pile of Legos you just dumped on the floor and fill in the gaps because I'm looking at it from this angle and that's actually a slanted flat piece with two steps versus, you know, two pieces that are right next to each other. And then based off of that, it's really simple. You go to the catalog, right? You have the catalog online. You apply the pieces. You see what's the closest match and fit. There you have it. But you also posted a really cool link about the Steam Exploration series.
Oh, absolutely. So Lego has been focused on learning for quite a long time, too. And this particular link that I've posted deals with NASA's collaboration with Lego and Lego's collaboration with NASA. It's kind of a two-way street here to build and to have learning curricula and Bricks together to get students engaged and involved in the Artemis 1 mission. And yes. I took a look through this. I've signed up to learn more and be notified around this as well. There are some really incredible physics lessons that LEGO has created here too, with ramps and gears and levers. What a great way to extend from the Mindstorms robotic and first robotics leagues type of stuff even earlier in people's educational career to make learning that much more fun and see something that they put together actually work. Very cool. Very cool.
I'm excited.
Hats off to LEGO. All right, moving right along to I'd like to call this a Mac Mini. Actually,
it's a mini Mac Mini. Say that three times fast.
Where are you? Are you going back?
This is one of those stories, and we seem to have these periodically, where somebody takes a very or nearly very modern piece of software, or a really really old piece of software, and completely puts it on the wrong device in a way, or a device that it should not have any right of running on. And in this case, this guy decided he wanted to build his only little Mac, portable Mac, right? Not a laptop, but a portable Mac running Big Sur, which is the current GA released of the Mac operating system. And he prints a case, he puts the chipset down, he puts a monitor in, and it's just one of these really cool examples of somebody who wanted to do something and did it. Now, I'm sure this is officially a Hackintosh, right?
Because it has to be. It
definitely doesn't have an Apple logo on it, but I did see it boot up with an Apple logo, and I was pretty impressed by that.
Yeah.
Take a look at this one. Very, very cool. Every time I see one of these types of builds, I'm amazed at the desire of people to do this and then to pull it off. So,
yeah, super deluxe cool. All right, so moving from a very teensy little Mac to something a little bit larger in the robotics space, Hyundai has recently acquired Boston Dynamics. And we've talked about Spot on, gosh, a number of times on the podcast because we've been pretty darn impressed with this particular robot. And I felt myself dancing along with these robot Spot bots and seeing how they could be used to orchestrate themselves and do what boy bands do.
Okay, Boston Dynamics, their machine learning algorithms that they're using to improve the balance and movement of the various robotic pieces that they have, specifically Spot in this case, continues to just blow me away. I like you, I was utterly amazed by what they were able to pull off with this. It always makes me think we're getting so good, and then I see the military examples of it, and I'm like, and it scares the heck out of me. I would say the animalism of this, because it looks very natural. The movement is fluid, and it's a great way to do it. I mean, dancing's hard, right? Synchronized dancing is slightly less hard if you're a robot than it is if you're a human, but they are doing phenomenal things with this.
Yeah, and it's another proof of technology case that shows the level of precision that can be accomplished, right? You know, and I'm reminded of like the opening scene from Austin Powers, you know, with the pool, you know, and the synchronized swimming kind of stuff going on here too. So have a look at the video, you'll see it. It won't be exactly Austin Powers-esque, but no. There's still some fun stuff.
Probably
there.
Probably not.
Now, things that are worth taking pictures of.
Yes.
There's another one coming here, and this one was from Andy too, I think, wasn't it?
Yes, I believe it was.
This is the Perseverance rover having, 62 images being shot by Ingenuity of the rover. So it's not really a selfie, right? Because they are two separate things.
Yes.
Right? So that'd be like saying my selfie stick. Well, no, it wouldn't be. Anyway, no. It's pictures of Mars and
of robots
Perseverance,
on Mars.
And it's there and it's cool. And the way that it had to be done was also incredible when you think about all the image work that we talked about before, about how do you make one seamless image, clean it up, and make it feel as if it were one wide angle lens, right?
Yeah, very, very cool. And, you know, that's really what we do a lot with shots on other planets, right? Because the cost of shipping an individual, you know, a high-resolution graphic is very expensive, but you can send lots of smaller ones over time. I don't mean expensive as in cost. I mean literally on cost to the mission, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that they're then able to take all these different pictures, turn that mosaic into something super high-res, super capable, is super cool.
Yep. All right, now, staying on the thought of taking pictures in space, we have a story around the Hubble telescope, which apparently has had some computer problems, and naturally, the right thing to do when you have a computer problem is
reboot.
Turn it off and turn it back on again. And reboot it, exactly. So, apparently that didn't work. So there's still work to be done here on the Hubble telescope, and I was amazed. I hadn't thought about this in a while. It's 30 years up in space.
Yeah,
that's pretty incredible, isn't it?
Well, what really amazes me, and it's really a testament to engineering, right? Engineering in general is you design something for certain specifications, and especially with NASA and especially with space missions, and then those specifications say the life expectation for this robot on Mars is 90 days, right? Or 12 months. And 10, 15 years later, it's still working. I don't remember the original duration of Hubble, but I thought it was around 10 years is what it was targeted for.
Probably so.
And now we're in year 30, and they're still figuring out how do we fix this one problem that's just come up and extend the life of this mission
even
much
more.
Much longer. I am blown away. I'm really excited, and Michael, you and Andy both know this. I'm working on the Lego shuttle. I built the Hubble already. So putting those together with this story, it's all coming together like a giant set of bricks that's been captured with a camera and then given me a vision to create.
And a book with a series of instructions.
Well, yeah.
So basically, we're training you to go on an emergency mission up in space to do a spacewalk and fix the Hubble by installing a new Mac Mini onto the Hubble.
That's right. It's the plan all along.
We're very nearly there, so that's good news. All right, so cameras. Calculators, computers, timekeeping stuff. I've got a little story here that I'd love to share too, and that is about iSmartClock. So we haven't done recommendations in a while. So not EYE, I as in a little I, smart clock.
Like you.
Like
I.
And this is a great app here. I've actually interacted with the developer on this app because one of the challenges of it was that when we went through our most recent macOS upgrade, some of the backgrounds were now no longer opaque. No longer transparent. So they became opaque, which was a little bit less nice than it was before. I wrote a short note to Alberto. He was very kind, replied back to me and said, hey, you know, time pressures, you know, for someone who builds a clock app. Yeah, it's interesting. But true. Labor of love for him. He actually reached out to me this morning and said, hey, Michael, you probably know this already, because if you have your Mac set to auto update, you will get the new version of iSmartClock. And what I love about this is you can set up this little clock, position it anywhere on your screen. You can have it as an analog. And it's just really nice to be able to look up and see, oh, look, we've got about 5 minutes to go before we have to end our recording today, and I can see it very easily and not just get the digital one from the operating system. So if you're in the mood for a clock, check this one out in the Mac App Store. I highly recommend it.
Excellent. Yes, and I remember when you first started using it, I was on a web meeting with you and immediately asked, what's that app?
Yeah, so it's cool stuff. And so my home Mac, which I'm using right now, has not updated yet. But after we're done with the show, because I try not to change things,
Don't change things right before the show. We have learned that.
Yeah, you know, you don't want to change things right before you need other things to work. It's just one of those golden rules of development and deployment exercises. So deploying 30 years, more stuff. Wow. Got a few stories about video and RTVMP, radio, TV, and motion pictures. So this one's Terminator 2 Judgment Day is 30 years old. Another case of, expected that.
The best of all the Terminator movies.
Well, that's what this article is asserting. So
it's a fact. Come on.
Yeah.
And if you disagree, you should tweet at us at gamesorg_biz.
So other things that are new in the realm of film, which I was delighted to see, Michael, I think this came from you, is Good Omens is coming for another season.
Yes.
On Amazon Prime.
You and I both enjoyed this.
Very much.
Enjoyed the book. This is actually additional kind of background stories that Neil Gaiman and Terry Pritchett had already sketched out but never wrote the book for.
Mm-hmm.
So it's extending the universe. I'm really looking forward to this one. This will be fun.
That's going to be great. I love that. Moving along, so we had an old one and a new one, and now we have one that's in the vault, to borrow a phrase.
Permanently.
From Disney. And it is from Disney, too. It is in the vault. So Seth Green and others had created something called Star Wars Detours. And this article from Gizmodo is talking about how it will unlikely ever see the light of day, which is unfortunate because there are 39 episodes and stories around their Star Wars universe and people done together with all the George right Lucas. People, with George Lucas and the whole Skywalker team. That are going to sit in the vault. And not only were there that many that have been completed, I read in this thing, there were 62 unproduced scripts beyond that. So it's like, oh my goodness, this was supposed to be so much fun. We talked about it a few weeks ago. Maybe there will be a demand arising saying, hey, we need to see this.
Yes.
So you never know. And then as we're coming in for a close and a landing here, we've got a rest in peace. So we had something new, something old, something is probably not going to see the light of day, and now something that's coming to end of life. Minecraft Earth is closing down.
Yeah, and I know you and I both talked about it on the show when it was launched, back in 2019, I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember. I know I signed up to get information on it. I don't know if you signed up actually and got into it, but not having a Minecraft account, I played around with a little local Minecraft server for a while. I just never really got into it. I'm guessing since the shutting down that it did not do as well as they expected, or maybe it was so successful that the server load for all the existing items that were floating around the earth for people to virtually stumble into was a problem. But either way, yep. We bid you farewell, Minecraft Earth.
Bye-bye. So with that, we'll say farewell to our listening audience again for yet another week's episode. Stay tuned for more stories about all kinds of good fun things like we talked about this week. Send us your stories. Drop us links. Hit us up on Twitter. We'll be happy to pick them up and bring them back and talk about them on our next episode of GamesAtWork.biz.
See ya. Bye. You've been listening to GamesAtWork.biz, the podcast about gaming, technology, and play. We are part of the Blueberry Podcasting Network, and would like to thank the band Random Encounters for their song, Big Blue. You can follow us on Twitter at GamesAtWork_biz or at our website at GamesAtWork.biz.